She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
What is up, Wisconsin? I'm gonna light on fire because we're talking about money, money, money. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 o'clock, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money, money, money. My special guest this half hour is Saru Jayaraman. She is the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage, a national organization, campaign, and coalition fighting for a full fair minimum wage for every person who works in America. It's only fitting, Saru, that you would join me next. I just got off with a chef who's a friend of the show, and our focus today, Saru, is tips. We've reached a tipping point on tips, it seems, have we not? Oh, you're muted. That old
yes,
fun
we
thing.
Have. Yes, we have reached a tipping point. Absolutely.
So the New York Times recently ran a headline that said tipping is everywhere. We've got former President Trump, Vice President Harris talking about taxes on tips. Let's just start sort of from the beginning. When I've traveled to Europe, tipping isn't a thing. It doesn't even really exist in a lot of places. How did we get where we are, where frankly, everything now people are being asked to tip? Tipping is built into basically almost every restaurant worker's salary. We have a decreased minimum wage because of the presumption of tips. How'd we get here?
It's a really great question and a sad story. So look, before emancipation in the US, tipping was not prevalent. Actually, Americans hated tipping. They said, this is a European thing. We're Americans. We're a democracy. And you should get good service regardless of what you can afford to tip. And by the way, we think employers should pay their workers, not customers. And waiters in the US at that time, prior to 1853, were mostly white guys. They only got wages, no tips. And in 1853, they went on strike for higher wages, and the restaurant industry instantly started looking for cheaper labor. After emancipation, basically a decade later, 1865, the restaurant industry started hiring newly freed Black people, Black women in particular, and telling them, we're not going to pay you. You're going to get this new thing that's just come from Europe called a tip. And that was the first time in world history that tips were mutated from being an extra or bonus on top of a wage, as they had been for generations in Europe, to becoming a replacement for wages, as they became in the United States, in order to allow two industries to hire Black people for free. The Pullman trains were hiring Black men for free. The restaurants were hiring Black women for free. As you may know, the Pullman car porters organized the first Black union and won the right to one fair wage, a full minimum wage with tips on top, in 1937. And a year later, the National Restaurant Association, which was formed in response to the Pullman car porters organizing, said, we'll make sure our workers never got what the Pullman car porters got. In 1938, they managed to get restaurant workers exempted from the first federal minimum wage that passed in 1938. So we started with a $0 wage for tipped restaurant workers in 1938, and we've gone from $0 all the way up to $2.13 an hour at the federal level, and I believe it's just over $3 in Wisconsin. And so Wisconsin is now one of 43 states that persists with this legacy of slavery for a workforce that's still overwhelmingly women of color, mostly single moms working in very casual restaurants. Most of these workers don't work in fine dining. They work in IHOPs and Denny's and Applebee's, and they struggle with 3 times the poverty rate of other workers. They use food stamps at double the rate. And with the pandemic, they started reaching their, you said there's a tipping point. Well, there's a tipping point for consumers.
But yes.
There's also been a tipping point for workers where they've said enough is enough. and they've started walking off the job in the millions across the country. And that has led to a lot of employers having to raise wages and other industries trying to emulate the restaurant industry by also introducing tipping so that they too can pay the subminimum wage. So until we end this legacy of slavery, you're just going to see tipping spread because every employer will want the boondoggle that the restaurant industry has had for 150 years.
I'm writing down buzzwords, Saru, like boondoggle. It is a legacy of slavery. And to that point, exactly, Saru, when I think about the different restaurants and places that I've been where tipping is expected, what I often find is that men, especially white men, have the most coveted service industry positions. So if you go into any 4 or 5 star hotel or restaurant, I guarantee you that there will be a majority, if not most to all of these servers or folks that are going to get tips at those really high-end places.
That's right.
Are mostly men and nearly entirely white men.
That's right.
Again, being left to women and women of color to do the jobs where they are much more economically at risk and therefore vulnerable to all sorts of terrible behavior like harassment frankly, sexual assault. We know that this is not the best way to do things. And yet I've heard for many years from people that operate service industry businesses, restaurants and bars. I got a ton of friends that work across the service industry panorama, including in hotels, hotel workers. I've heard for a long time, like, we can't afford to pay a base rate or a minimum wage, which again, ain't even minimum wage if we're talking about the federal minimum levels.
That's right.
You've studied this, Saru. What's your response when you hear people saying, I can't pay people a livable wage?
Yeah. So there are 7 states that already require a full minimum wage with tips on top. They're not that far from Wisconsin, California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska all require a full minimum wage with tips on top. And we just won the state of Michigan. We also just won the city of Chicago. Illinois is not that far. You know, we think we might pass Illinois this year. So this is moving across the country. But in the 7 states that have done this forever, California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska, actually, restaurant sales are higher than they are in Wisconsin. Small businesses, restaurants are growing faster than they are in Wisconsin. Overall industry job growth rates are higher. And tipping averages are higher, by the way, because guess who are the best tippers, Maggie? I bet you know who are the best tippers in the United States of America.
Women.
It is women, yes. But specifically, it's restaurant workers. Restaurant workers.
Of course. And other industry folks. Yes.
Because they know what it's like to live on tips. And so when they get paid more, they tip better and tipping goes up. As you said, sexual harassment goes way down. So we already know what happens when you pass this law. And why is it that restaurants do better? Well, don't take it from me. The CFO of Denny's actually admitted on a shareholder call in 2021 that Denny's California, he said, grows faster than any other Denny's anywhere in the country. Why? Because when we pay our people a full minimum wage, guess what they do? They bring their families to eat at Denny's and the guest receipts are higher and the business does better. So everybody does better when workers are paid enough. And we know it's possible. You don't even have to go to another state. In Wisconsin, after the pandemic, so many workers left the industry. We've tracked over 100 restaurants in Wisconsin that switched to paying a full minimum wage with tips on top because they couldn't afford to find people. People couldn't afford to work for $3. So they had to raise wages in order to recruit and retain staff.
Yeah, so critical. My guest for this installment of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money is Saru Jeyaraman. She is, again, the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage. She's also authored Behind the Kitchen Door, a national bestseller, as well as Forked, a new standard for American dining. And most recently, One Fair Wage, ending subminimum pay in America. She was listed in CNN's top 10 visionary women, which is freaking awesome. And you are also acknowledged by the James Beard Foundation, which I took special note of. James Beard, for those who aren't foodie wonks, is considered sort of the gold standard in American restaurateurship. gives out annual awards. And for the James Beard Foundation to acknowledge this tipping problem, I thought was really, really key. When you talk to restaurant owners, especially those, now we have celebrity chefs, are they coming to this movement as well? Do they understand that tipping doesn't work?
A lot of them do. And as I said, since the pandemic, we've tracked, I think at this point, we've tracked close to 6,000 restaurants across the country, including lots of celebrity chefs, but also small mom and pop restaurants around the country who are saying, look, we just honestly can't afford, it's not working anymore. It's not sustainable. We can't find people willing to work for these wages. And frankly, you know this, Maggie, in much of the country, including Wisconsin, workers are having a hard time finding to be able to live anywhere near where the restaurants are, you know, like,
yes,
rent is so high, gas is so high. Like, for, if you think about a $3 wage and the cost of a gallon of gas, you're not going to pay more to get to work than you get when you get there. And when there's a slow day or there's a blizzard or a, you know, a very hot day, that's all you get. You don't get the tips. And so yeah. I think there's a reckoning happening, both because, look, post-pandemic, so many workers said enough is enough. 1.2 million workers walked off the job. Thousands of restaurants had to raise wages. And yes, we've had a lot of new supportive restaurant owners join forces with us. But also, as you started the show, there's a tipping point where there's general tip fatigue. Tips have gone down. It's now undeniable that tips have gone down since the start of the pandemic to now. And that has resulted in a lot of workers saying, I honestly don't make enough in tips to make this job worth it anymore. And so all of that combined means there is no future for this industry unless we pay people a full livable wage with tips on top.
My special guest, Saru Jeyaraman. We're going to have more when we come back after these brief messages. We got to take care of some business, including, why are we talking about not taxing tips? Is that actually the solution? I have my doubts. Saru weighs in after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, folks. We'll be right back with more Maggie and the Millionaires talking money.
Boy, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
If you wanna run away with me, I know a galaxy and I could take you for a ride. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop for life. Glitter in the sky, glitter in my eyes, shining just the way you like. If you're feeling like you need a little
welcome
bit
back, Wisconsin. And welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, folks. We've got two more sets of Brewers tickets for tomorrow's St. Louis game to give away before the end of the show. Don't go anywhere. That might keep you around, but this is the information that absolutely should keep you around. My special guest is Saru Jeyaraman. She is the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage, a national organization working for a full and fair minimum wage for every person who works in America. Before the break, Saru, we mentioned, and again, you're on mute, just to be clear, we mentioned that both Vice President Harris and President Trump have proposed eliminating income taxes on tips. Certainly, as a foundational point, lowering taxes on people that have to work for a living and get paychecks, especially those that are most economically vulnerable. We should be looking at every available policy to reduce income taxes on folks like that. But this seems to me to be a bit of a distraction, like a look over here while we're not really solving the fundamental problem. Are eliminating taxes on tips a good idea?
So first of all, I do want to say that restaurant workers are thrilled. We have 300,000 in our membership, and We represent 14 million nationally. And look, this is the first time tipped workers, restaurant workers have been discussed at all in a presidential campaign. And so it is heartening to finally see the needs of these workers uplifted in poll after poll. These workers, young people, Black voters, Latinx voters, has named cost of living and jobs with living wages as the absolute top most important issue for this year's election. So it's heartening that it seems like both candidate campaigns are getting that. It's unfortunate that, like you said, it's this solution, because our research shows that 2/3 of tipped restaurant workers do not earn enough income to pay federal income tax. And so 2/3 of workers wouldn't even benefit from this proposal. What's clearly really needed is a raise. What's clearly really needed is for employers to be required to pay workers a full, fair minimum wage with tips on top. It is only fair. Look, every other industry, every other employer has to pay the minimum wage. Yeah. Why does this one industry get to be left out? And why would this one industry get a tax break compared to every other worker? Every worker deserves a full, fair minimum wage with tips on top. Now, for tips that are on top of a full minimum wage, sure, let's not tax them. But let's get everybody first and foremost to get paid by their employer a living wage that allows them to count on that wage, know that it's coming regardless of, as you said, hurricanes, blizzards, hot days, or having to show a little skin to the customer that comes in and demands it. I mean, during the pandemic, we heard from thousands of women. Yeah. I'm regularly asked, take off your mask so I can see how cute you are before I decide how much to tip you. And that was the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, tip of the iceberg, pun intended. I mean, this is, I have worked in service. I didn't work in service for very long. And even back then, I worked at a lunch and breakfast joint, which is a slog, to say the very least. And I was young. I was 16. I got comments all the time, and they weren't from creepy guy. It was just older gentlemen thinking they were being friendly, but I was constantly being assessed. I've heard horror stories from my friend. I had a number of friends when I lived in New York that did bottle service. I can't even tell those stories on the radio. This is such a fundamental issue. And the idea that this impacts women and women of color so acutely, I think, needs to be emphasized. And I feel like the discussion of eliminating tax on tips isn't just a distraction. It's literally picking people's pocket.
That's right.
Right? Like, look over here at this bright, shiny thing while I rob you blind. Exactly. Because the problem is the underlying wage. There are 14 million restaurant workers in the U.S. We know that approximately 1.2 million people have left the industry. I hope that we have reached the tipping point.
I really hope so, too, because can I tell you something else that's problematic with the no tax on tips? During the pandemic, 2/3 of tipped workers, including in Wisconsin, told us they couldn't get unemployment insurance because in states like Wisconsin, they were told their wages were too low to qualify for benefits. So the less taxable tips are, the less workers are going to be eligible for things like unemployment insurance and Social Security and lots of things later in life, which will affect them. And so what we need is for people to be paid an actual legitimate wage by their employer that the government will recognize when awarding benefits. And I do just want to say, Maggie, your experience is the common experience. Most people don't work in the fine dining restaurant downtown. Yeah. They work in the corner breakfast place, or like I said, the IHOP or the Denny's or the mom and pop Mexican restaurant. That's where most people work, and they struggle with the absolute highest rates of sexual harassment. And you're right, it's women and women of color. And can I add young women?
So yes.
One in two Americans and one in two women, this is the first job that they encounter. It's the first time they're exposed to the world of work, and they are asked to do all kinds of crazy things. So I've interviewed women later in life who say, you know what, I've been sexually harassed later in my career, but I did nothing about it because it was never as bad as it was when I was a young woman working in restaurants, which means this industry sets the standard for what women and men consider acceptable in the workplace, and that's unacceptable.
It truly is. Frankly, Saru, I don't even need to be here. I just need to ask you a question because you know so much about this. And I'm so appreciative of your passion and clarity about, frankly, the moral rights and wrongs here. It has always been anathema to me from the first day that I ever worked that job that this was the job that I would make less than the minimum wage. I went home many days when things were slow with barely $3 per hour. It was excruciating and damnedly hard work as well. To me, the thing that really bothers me most about all of this is I see this as a shifting towards, frankly, trying to get more and more American workers off payroll, calling them contractors or gig workers so that we can eliminate all of these sorts of benefits that we're talking about. Is this part of a pattern, Saru?
It's intentional, Maggie. What, during the whole healthcare reform debate under President Obama, restaurants tried to claim tipped workers as independent contractors, saying they work for customers, not for us, in order to not have to cover them in the exchanges that were set up during Obamacare or healthcare reform. So they already think this way. They want to say we shouldn't have to pay more than $2 or $3 because you, the customer, pay them. They work for you, which is absurd and ridiculous because let's be real, who profits from the value of those workers' labor? It's not the customers. It's the employers who end up getting these workers to sell their products, their food, their service, and who ends up making the money at the end? It's the employers. It's especially the big chain restaurants that are raking.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jaru. This Saru, this conversation will continue. My special guest, Saru Jayaraman, she is the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage. We could talk about this before. A long time. I really appreciate your efforts. Folks, we're going to put where you can find more information in the show's blurb for today. You can find that at civicmedia.us. Again, you can check out Saru's work at One Fair Wage. You can read about their organization. It's time for a full and fair minimum wage for all. I'm Maggie Dawn. We've got another special guest coming up. It's Kristen Alfheim. She's running for State Senate District 18. You're not going to want to miss it. Giving away Brewers tickets next. Here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. And rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. When she wiped her slapping
time, Bobby's hand in mine. That's me and Kristen. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Kristen Alfheim. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. Little Janis Joplin this afternoon.
Why not?
You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and I am so happy to be joined by the original host of Civic Media's Rational Revolution, Appleton Common Council member, Democratic candidate for the newly drawn, now competitive State Senate District 18, Kristen Alfheim. Thank you so much for making time, Kristen. It's a real pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's good to see you face to face. I've been listening to you for a long time.
Well, thank you so much for that. First, let me take care of a little business that I promised our listeners, which was we've got a pair, actually two pairs of Brewers tickets. One pair up. If you are the first caller to answer this trivia question correctly, you'll get a pair of tickets to tomorrow. That is tomorrow's Brewers St. Louis Cardinals game. First pitch at 6:40 at AmFam Field. Here is your trivia question. You're going to call 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. First caller with the correct answer will win a pair of tickets in the beautiful club level. Here's your question. Who was the Brewers' first round draft pick in 1973? Who was the Brewers' first round draft pick in 1973. This one's a little tougher, but not impossible. Everybody knows this guy's name. I might even give you a little hint if the phone lines don't light up. I'll drop a little hint. Who was the Brewers' first round draft pick in 1973? Folks, call 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. But now down to the political business of the half hour, Kristen.
Let's get at it.
Let's get at it. This is now a redrawn Senate district. It is competitive for the first time in a long time. Some would say almost 40 years. First of all, what does state Senate district include now? Who's newly in state Senate district 18? So people know if they are the ones that should be paying close attention.
Well, I think everybody ought to be paying attention to the 18th. It is a big deal. The new 18th is now starts up in the bulk of Appleton, runs all the way through along Lake Winnebago, through Menasha, Nina, and the bulk of Oshkosh. Beautiful district, extremely important district, not just to those who live in it, but the entire valley. We really are the resource of a lot more people than just the voting members.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And again, I think State Senate District 18 and the effort across the state to make hay while the sun shines, while we've got these redrawn maps, finally fairer, moving in the right direction in so long. Why did you decide to throw your hat in the ring with this newly constituted 18th Senate district?
So I was actually on the ticket in 2022 when Appleton and Nina Menasha were drawn into the 19th. Right. And when I jumped into that race, I didn't jump in because I was mad about anything. I jumped in because I knew my history was in problem solving, in listening, in gathering information, and helping people from differing opinions come together and move forward. That is just who I am as a person. I've worked for over 10 years voluntarily in Madison and D.C., advocating for different issues, some being taxes and retirement, some being Alzheimer's research. Interesting that they tend to be red buses and blue buses, which I think is really nonsense. Who doesn't want a reasonable retirement expectation and tax code, and who doesn't want to cure Alzheimer's? If those aren't purple issues, I don't know what is. So I've had success in helping different groups realize that depending on who they're talking to, you figure out what we can find common ground on to move forward. And I've done that successfully for a very long time. So this was just kind of the next phase of it. The more I understood about local government, when I got into municipal government, the more I realized, and I thought I was fairly educated on things. No. The general person literally knows nothing about how government really is working. All we have are the talking points that are being, shared loudly, whether it be the radio or on TV. And I think my skill set is to help bring the knowledge forward so people can actually make rational choices and hear the whole story, not just, again, a live point here or somebody's opinion there. Get all the facts, and then we can make good decisions from that point. Now, with 18, the numbers are clearly in our favor. It's a beautiful district. It's really the way the Fox Valley should have been drawn all along. And I think it's even more important to have someone who understands how to bridge conversations. We must, in the Fox Valley, understand that we have we have four massive school districts. We have four municipalities. We have some of the world-recognized global leaders in industry, and we probably have more small businesses than most Senate districts combined in many cases. It will take balance. It will take common sense and rational thinking to be able to make sure our entire ecosystem of the Fox Valley is healthy. People, business, environment, all of it has to work together, and it's not a one-sided conversation.
Couldn't agree with you more, Kristen. And that point was certainly driven home to me during my time serving in local government as well. I realized that indeed, when you think about what local government delivers for its voters and constituents, these aren't red and blue issues. No. They're not talking point issues from the national talking heads. These are really kitchen table issues. Wanted to ask you, given your time on the Common Council in Appleton, what's an insight or something that was surprising to you that you want voters and regular people to understand about why local government, why state Senate seats like the 18th are so important to the quality of life that we all enjoy, and frankly, why it's so less partisan than it's made out to be?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that, again, everybody thinks there's so much waste going on. No, there's not. There is not a single person in municipal government that is not doing the job of 2.5 people. The budgets in these municipalities are literally 40% behind where they were 12 years ago. 40%. We are absolutely trying to do more as our communities expand and the expectation of services goes up. We are trying to do more with much less. It relates to the same conversation of the school districts. The school district, there is no waste. We have to try and find $1,500 in a budget is difficult to do. Where people start talking about waste, what they're talking about is, are there services that we are paying for that someone does not feel personally? So it's interesting the dynamics you hear in municipal government about what is wasteful. I don't think putting money towards mental health is wasteful. I don't think putting money towards children and making sure there are healthy activities available to people, I don't think that's wasteful. I think that's investment in our community to make sure we are as strong as we can be moving forward. So again, we always have to look beyond our own backyard. What we are using as a citizen is not necessarily what the entire community is utilizing to stay and to become healthy. We have to have all of these pieces working together.
Well, Vince, I think so much of political discourse has been focused on individual interests. And I think you speak to this a little bit, Kristen, right? When I think about what's really impactful in people's lives is I think not just about individual interest, but I also think about community interest.
Right.
Because it is true that if your entire community is healthier, you will actually be healthier on average over time. Your family will be healthier. That in, this is the high tides raising all ships notion. Right. And it shows up the most in local government because local governments deliver the most critical services.
Yeah.
And I tend to include state government in local government because, again, it has a direct impact on people's lives. What are the two or three major issues, Kristen, that are top of mind for you as a candidate and that you'd like to see the state take greater action on?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on all day. There's certainly a large list. I think that my at my core, I'm a believer in getting back to the business of government. The one thing the lines of the new maps have given us is the expectation of accountability of our elected officials.
Yes.
When you have a supermajority drawn, everyone is mad. The Republicans are mad because they can't get through everything that they want. The Democrats are mad because they can't get any ideas to even a committee hearing. It's just no one's happy about anything. And we have to get over that. We have to utilize these maps. By the way, I think Tony Evers is the most patriotic person on the planet by putting these maps in play because he made it a fair fight. It wasn't a sling it from one side to the other type thing. But my biggest issue is conversation. I absolutely, you know, I'm a Democrat. There is no question about it. I'm a people first individual. We must also have a little bit of a fiscal edge to us, though. And I do. You know, I play with money and taxes for a living. I do understand where we are in the world, and we can't always have what we want when we want it. But there was a time not that long ago where red and blue would come together. And we would find out of the 10 points that one side was suggesting that four of those was actually good for the people and the economic downside, other side. It was good fiscally and socially to do it.
Yep.
That is where I want to drive Madison one more time. And I believe there are people down there ready and willing to do that on both sides. My second issue is kids. Kids, 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 kids. Every problem that we have in society would be better if we dealt with children, the younger, the better. If we make sure that they are fed, we make sure they are healthy, we make sure they are housed, and we make sure they are educated. Everything in the world gets better if we provide those four things. And let's be honest, not every child has that. Again, we look at our own backyards. If we have been, you know, blessed enough in life to be raised by two parents with a comfortable income and a comfortable house and go to a good school, that's awesome. There are so many that aren't. In the Appleton, I know at least two out of the four school districts in the 18th Senate District, 40% of the kids that go to our schools are eligible for free meals. 40%.
Yeah.
We have got to help ensure children have every opportunity to find success in our community. If you want to talk about workforce development, start with kids. if you want to attract more talent into your organization, talk about schools. We have to drive that home. Women's issues, I'm just going to say, what the hell? The fact that we still are talking about this is beyond me. I am strong, strong, strong pro-choice all day long. So are the majority of Wisconsinites, and so is the Fox Valley. Let's just move forward from that and put some things in place that make it final. And don't think it's safe, because there were just rules in the last few months that they refused to make it a permanent, and they refused to take steps to make it firm. So we all have to show up for that reason as well. But those are some major issues that I have.
I think, as the next president of the United States likes to say, they are out of their minds, are they not?
Out of their minds. I have a shirt that says, seriously? I just want to wear that all day long. Seriously?
All day long. I heard, I was interviewing Congressman Dan Kildee during the DNC, and he said a line, Kristen, that I think you will particularly enjoy. I've said it a couple of times on air. I'm going to say it again because I hope our listeners as well start to remember it, because it really points to what is needed in politics, which is reasonable compromise. You talked about there's the 10 things and four of them we probably agree on into the overlap. And here's what the congressman said to me. Politics is the art of disappointing your supporters and those that you agree with at a rate they can absorb.
Yes.
We cannot let perfect be the enemy of the good. She certainly will not. Her name is Kristen Alfheim. She is the candidate to beat, if you will, the candidate that I'll be voting for if I lived in the 18th district. She's running for State Senate District 18 up in the Fox Valley. You can find out more about her where, Kristen? What's your campaign website?
You can find me at alfheimforwisconsin.org. Yes, you have to spell that all out.
I'll do it for him. That is A-L-F-H-E-I-M for F-O-R, Wisconsin.org. That's Alfheim4Wisconsin.org. You can find out all about Kristen's candidacy there. Thanks so much for spending some time this afternoon with us.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks.
Best of luck in the 18th, folks. We'll have the last segment of the day coming up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Final thoughts are up next.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Or welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You've got comments about what you heard today. It was a busy show. We've had guests back to back. We want to hear from you during the last segment. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. One of my favorite callers, Karina from Milwaukee. What do you have to say? Lots going on this afternoon.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello?
Karina.
Hi. You know what? I have a very primitive understanding, and I want to ask you a question. So I'm thinking this way. I make money, right? I pay taxes. Then I go to the restaurant. I eat. I pay taxes on the sales and stuff like that. And if I'm willing to give a tips to those people, I don't understand why they need to pay taxes. Can you explain that? I mean, it's my willing to give it to them, right?
Yeah, so I don't think, I believe Karina's specific question is, so I've been taxed on the money that I have in my pocket, and so I'm giving it to someone who works in a restaurant. Why do they get taxed again? Well, in general, that's how our spending works, right? Like, we get taxed on the money that ends up in our pocketbook, and we, again, pay taxes when we go buy stuff in the form of sales taxes. In general, there are a number of taxes in this country that are triggered by transactions. In a restaurant, of course, there's a transaction where you're purchasing food. But the real question I think Karina is getting at is, why isn't it a good idea to not tax tips? And I don't think I'm making an argument that there should be taxes on tips. I'm making an argument that removing an income tax on tips isn't solving the problem at all. The fundamental problem isn't taxing tips. The fundamental problem is we do not pay workers in the service business, in restaurants, a fair minimum wage. We don't pay many people a fair minimum wage. And by a fair minimum wage, I mean a wage that actually allows someone to live on it if they are willing to work 40 or 50 hours worth of good hard work in a week. I have asked people this question numerous times myself, conservative folks. So we do know what minimum wage is. It's not like some magic number. You can figure out for a single person living in a metropolitan statistical area, we know the average medical costs, how much food costs, how much housing costs average. We know all those things. We can work backwards. You assume a 40 or 50 hour work week, whatever you'd like, and we work backwards. That, my friends, should be your minimum wage. So the problem isn't necessarily that you're being taxed on tips. More on that in just one second. The problem is that the underlying wage is so deeply inadequate that tips are necessary in the first place. That's thing one. Thing two for Karina and others is this. I make this point, we make this point almost every day during that 3 o'clock hour Maggie and the Millionaire segment. We tax work unfairly in this country. People that work for a living, who have to work for a living, should be taxed less than or at most equal to wealth that is generated by doing nothing. When I say tax wealth like work, I mean that a dollar that is earned when someone sits on their butt and their investment becomes more valuable, that dollar's worth of investment value increase should be taxed just like a dollar earned from blood, sweat, and tears that people who actually work for a living earn. I think it is an unconscionable and immoral wrong that we do not tax wealth like work. So it is both of those answers, right? We don't pay people that work in restaurants and in service enough, and that is a moral wrong. And secondly, we tax people that work for a living in the wrong way, and we do not tax billionaires and corporations nearly enough. Mark from Prairie du Sac, what do you have to say this afternoon, sir?
Yeah, thank you. And I'm wondering about the whole not taxing the tips and being well aware that a woman I dated back in the 80s, she was actually being taxed on money because the employer was actually imputing what her tips would have been.
Right.
And taxing her based on that, and that was completely
that
unfair.
Trick.
And it was brought. And I was brought up before that you know, all these people getting the money, you know, for Social Security, because the employer should be kicking in then toward their Social Security more, because the tips are being used to make up for the money they're not making. Perhaps the true solution is to bring up the minimum wage up to a living wage. The tips are no longer required like they have over in Europe. You give a tip for exceptional service rather than to help make up for the employer's lack of not paying the men and women that work in this profession. And I'm a big tipper because I remember for my girlfriend at the time back in the 80s, I mean, she was working, and back when they first dated back in the late 70s, she was working two restaurant jobs. She was working at Bridgman's and Twin Ports Truck Center and, you know, working her butt off, you know, to pay for college, and it wasn't making...
It's damn hard work. From fine dining to diners, being a server, a busboy, working as a line chef, a sous chef, chef de cuisine, bartenders, it's hard work. You deal with ornery people. You deal with disrespect. And if we require people to earn quote unquote tips,
yeah,
we set women especially up for terrible harassment on the job.
For sure. And Maggie, as putting in two decades of service time in, I can tell you, I can back up pretty much all of that. But the other thing I want to add on is that if you go to a wedding or somebody's event, you're giving up your entire week's worth of work because it's on the weekend, and that's when you actually make money. So
yep.
On top of everything else, you're socially screwed.
Yep, you give up your social life. A texter from the 414 texting in this, minimum wage jobs like McDonald's are not supposed to be livable wage jobs. They're supposed to be for high school kids. Yeah, well, maybe tell all the people that work at McDonald's during the school day that. Tell the working moms that pick up shifts at McDonald's that.
Tell my neighbors that work at McDonald's that I see every morning.
Like, if they were supposed to be for high school kids, since when exactly? I don't buy that for one second. Jeff from Wind Lake, I'm sorry we ran out of time this afternoon. Can't get to you, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm going to be back tomorrow. But just letting you know, on Thursday and Friday, I have to travel for work. So you're going to have some special guest hosts, Matt Rothschild and Jim Santel. But as I end every show, I'll say it yet again this afternoon. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it's better when we stand together. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, how about a little something, you know,